the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Well, if you were to write a book, what would you write a book about? What would it be about?
I think I'd write a book about how to work with micropreneurs across the globe with respect and do it profitably. Because a lot of people do it profitably with no respect, but it's not sustainable. And I think I'd probably be in that area, but I don't know. On the other hand, I might write a book about dogs. Sometimes I think this everybody's got a book in them thing creates a lot of really boring books.
It does. And it's saturated. You know, but people are not creative when it comes to their writing process. They don't put humor in it. They don't give exercises. They don't recap. So that's what people are looking for. They don't do audio. You know, audio books are huge now. That's what I do. I don't have time to curl up and read a book like I used to. Because I'm busy on the edge promoting wonderful people like you. Hello, Brains, and welcome home. We are with Annabelle Kay from London. Yes, she's popped in to talk to us a little bit about the world of social media, what that looks like, what that feels like. Now, we all think that we know Facebook in and out, but sometimes that's just a place for us to hold therapy and have keyboard courage, versus actually utilizing it as a business tool and how to up-level our business. We're going to talk a little bit about Twitter and LinkedIn and what's that other one? Oh, Instagram. Those are so popular. But, you know, Annabelle's expertise has been in this industry for over 2 decades. So Brains, help me welcome her. There she is, to the edge, Annabelle Kay. Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. My real expert is in contracts and things legal and supporting businesses. So I use social media simply for a purpose, you know, which is very different to how social media gurus use it. You know what I mean? It's right, a bit like right. A PR expert has got a totally different take on social media to their clients, haven't they? You know, to me, it's just a tool. I think people make it a bit overcomplicated sometimes.
They do. So tell us a little bit, firstly, about your history and how you got into this industry. And then we're going to go more into how to actually utilize it for your benefit.
My business is 40 years old this year.
No.
It is, yep. And I founded it 40 years ago and I was going to have a great party, but obviously 2020 hasn't been the year for parties. So that's not working out. And I started an employment law and HR practice. And that was a very classic, like advising, consulting, a little bit of litigating model that stood us very well. And we got to the 90s, back end of the 90s, and we realized that the world was changing. And we created the Coffee Clutch brand to address the gig economy, micropreneurs, people who are trading from their back bedroom across the world. The world that you and I live in, by the way, and everyone else just kind of arrived in quite unexpectedly. And because of that, we had to find ways to reach our marketplace virtually. And, you know, I couldn't go to every village in the world and find everyone who was a solopreneur. And so Coffee Clutch from the very beginning was designed to be an online brand.
Well, that is very unique. And so a lot of people are looking at how to pivot. They are concerned about their business. They're concerned about casting out and throwing out a wider net. Can you give some solopreneurs some suggestions on how to do that?
The easiest way to pivot is to take a track that's parallel to the one you're already successful in. So if you have, as we did, a successful employment law practice, creating a gig economy practice is a lot easier than if you're a plumber and you want to create a gig economy practice,
right.
Because the things you know are relevant to what you need to know. And also, you already have a reputation, a long tail history. I'm quite concerned by the number, and I understand when people are desperate for money, and you know, we all do whatever we can. But the number of people who woke up this morning being expert web designers who 6 weeks ago were bookkeepers. And there's no long tail of experience. There's no depth of expertise. And you have a phrase that I think came from America, which is called a side hustle, you know, doing another thing alongside what you really do. And my concern about the side hustle mindset is that if you view your business as a side hustle, are you taking it seriously? Are you properly insured? Are you properly accredited? Do you really know what you're doing? Because we see a lot of solopreneurs have a bit of a go at this, and then they leave their customers in the lurch because they've suddenly pivoted to something else. So I think I understand we all need to make money, and we all need to change how we do what we do. And some of us need to change what we do. But I think we have to do it with mindfulness and thought, not just randomly run about trying to do stuff, because you do a lot of harm to the business community around us if we take people's money and we don't deliver.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. And that is so important, that what you said, I love that, how, you know, stay in the same pretty much lane that you have been in once before, but just be able to define that, because you know that. You know, again, you can't be a plumber and then turn around and be a web designer. It takes a different skill set. And then your client base, you know, how do you go to your plumbing clients and say, hey, you know, I'm now building websites. Do you want me to do that for you? You're not taken seriously. There's a lot of risk to reward too. You know, a lot of people are wondering, how do I start a business with no money? You know, what sort of incorporations do I need so that I'm not at a liability in my business? Can you give us some suggestions on that from the contract perspective?
That is still terribly hard. I mean, in 1980, I went to my bank and I said to them, will you lend me some money? And by the way, I was after £500, which is approximately $500 these days. So I wasn't after a major investment. And the bank manager told me, there are three reasons we won't lend you any money. You're female, wow, you're young, and wow, you're inexperienced. Well, I've remedied two of the three conditions, but obviously I've continued to be female throughout, right, and I'm not planning to change that despite modern technology. But so one of the things I've learned is that if you're going to try and get funding, you need to go to people who are in the market of funding people like you.
Mm.
You know, it's ridiculous to go to someone whose smallest loan packages are $4 million and say, I need $2,000, right, because you're wasting your time. And I think entrepreneurs don't realize that the finance market is segmented like that. Somebody said to me, you'd have had a much easier time borrowing $250,000, but I didn't need $250,000. So that wasn't very helpful. So I think do your research, because we tend to think all funding institutions, all banks are for all businesses. But that's as daft as saying all businesses do the same thing.
Right, right, right. That's great information, because I didn't know that either. You know,
well, you can waste time. I mean, these people have done that now with the C-19 crisis. You know, they've gone to a bank to beg for a loan who's in the market of delivering finance to people not at all like you. So you're going to go to the bottom of the queue, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then you take off the other boxes, you know, and that's just another way to deny you your opportunity to grow. So I want to talk to you a little bit about, as you said, social media. How do you incorporate that in the work that you do?
Oh, it's probably been one of the most difficult things I've had to learn, because when I first started to do this, and Coffee Clutch as a brand is about 11 or 12 years old now. So if you rewind 10 or 11 years ago, people in the business to business market weren't using social media. Right, it was B2C, it was for shoes and consumer goods and stuff like that. So there wasn't really anybody to watch. And a lot of people tried to teach me what to do. And either they were rubbish teachers or I was a rubbish pupil. You know, I suspect there was a bit of both going on there. But I found it really hard because people who came from a conventional big corporate marketing background who ran big social media campaigns would say things to me like, you've got to plan all your product launches and your tweets and your videos almost a year ahead. And you hear this now. I work with lots of social media groups because I do contracts for them, and they'll go, you need a plan. And that's great. I mean, I'm all for planning. But because I didn't know what I was doing, I didn't know what I was doing this week, never mind planning what to do next week or next month or next year. And I found it very frustrating. And because I'm quite an experiential learner, I found the best thing to do was to do a little bit, see how that worked, change it a bit, do a little bit more. Now, after 12 years, I'm getting to the point when I think maybe I should have a plan, you know, of what am I doing next, who's doing what, because I'm trying to coordinate a bigger team and I drive them a bit mad with, oh, let's do this. But when I first got going, I had to get a feel for it. You know, it's like learning to ride a horse or drive a car. You can read all the manuals you want, but getting behind the wheel or in the saddle gives you a feel that nothing else will.
Right. And, you know, getting your hands dirty. So yeah. What should people know? I mean, what are some of the pitfalls? What are some of the mistakes that they make when they try to use this type of, you know, publicity, marketing, advertising? What are some of the hiccups? I'll give you my opinion after you give me yours.
Well, I think the biggest hiccup is thinking that social media is there to help you publicize your business for nothing, which probably was true when it first got going. You know, like a lot of new things, it was very cooperative and collaborative. So people complain about, you know, Facebook doesn't show their business post to right. enough people. But of course, Facebook's business model is to get you to pay to reach the audience that's on Facebook. So assuming you're into the idea of capitalism, and if you're not, running a business is doubly tricky. You have to understand that you and the audience are the product in Facebook, right? You got on there for free. You reach a certain number of people for free. But if you want to go beyond that, Facebook's business model is you will pay.
That's right.
They constantly change stuff to make sure that your reach as a free user is limited and confined. Just as if you get an online free sample from a perfume company, you can't go back and order 100 weight more because you like that perfume for free. But people don't understand it because it feels like part of their day to day. So they think if they put up on their business page, you know, I've got a product, come buy it, that's it then.
Right. Well, you know, and they utilize it so wrong. A couple of things that really annoy me is, you know, people will have an event or they will make an announcement and they'll tag you. When they tag you in them.
Don't get me started. I've been untagging for half an hour. No, people I barely know tagging me into events that couldn't conceivably be of interest to me just because they're trying to hitchhike my audience onto their views.
And that will get you unfriended and blocked because it's an insult. You know, you have not, let's have an introduction. Let's have a short conversation. Let me tell you what I'm doing. Let me see if there's a level of interest. And if there's no level of interest in what I'm doing, what in the world makes you think that I'm going to continue to follow you? People are looking for quantity. They're not looking for quality. I would rather have 1,000 people that are going to engage, that are going to do business with me, that are going to share my information, my posts, and really be involved, than 10,000 people that are just sitting there for the fact of being 10,000 people. And when they have that many numbers, they're tricked into believing that they're an influencer. You're not an influencer, brains, if you're not doing the work. That's the first thing. It's the second thing that you said about Facebook. Facebook has changed their algorithms and they will continue to change that because they too are a business. They're not in this just because it's cute. You know, Mark Zuckerberg was fined $1 billion by the United States government. Do you really think that a smart businessman like that is going to sit idly by and continue to have us all hypnotized by this thing called Facebook and we not eventually pay? You know, so you have to watch that. And then two, your business alliances, you know, your pitch, how you're pitching people, what is in that? Is there value in that? So I totally agree with what you're saying, you know, that it's very different. And when you talk to people on LinkedIn, it's not the same way that you talk to individuals on Facebook. Facebook is more like, you know, let's build a relationship. What are you cooking for dinner? What's your dog look like? You know, where are you going on vacation? When you're on LinkedIn, that's more business to business. Everyone over there is a subject matter expert. They're a professional. They're a solopreneur, an entrepreneur, C-level or E-level. They're looking to do some business. You wouldn't put yourself a picture of yourself in a bikini on the beach, or maybe you would, depends on what your business is.
Well, yeah, there is that. But I don't think I'll put a picture of me in a bikini anywhere.
Right.
But, those days have gone.
But that's not the platform for that. And then when you're talking on Instagram, you're talking to the millennials. You're talking to something quick and slick and exciting and fun and motivating and engaging. They want action. They want something to do. And then you got the Twitter bunch. The Twitter bunch is, you know, let's address this issue. Let's talk about politics. Let me get in your space. I have a limited amount of time. They want it just like this. So understanding who your audience is when you talk on these different platforms is huge. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And I think there's a feeling in social media that you have to be active on every platform, which puts enormous pressure on micropreneurs, because you just don't get any sleep. You know, I mean, you're constantly trying to run your business and generate your content. I tend to join every platform so that I can make sure I've got the Coffee Clatch brand there and it doesn't disappear. But I'm not equally active everywhere. I try to be active where my customers are.
Exactly.
Not everywhere. So you won't find Coffee Clatch videos on TikTok, you know, contracts and data security. Probably don't make very engaging TikTok videos, but I wouldn't expect the TikTok audience to relate to that in a big way.
Right, right, right. Because it's,
I might put one of my rubber duck videos up there though. That might work.
I have a lot of rubber ducks too. Why did you start collecting rubber ducks?
It was my husband's fault. I was rehearsing a talk on a tax change that we were having in the UK, and it's about taxing solopreneurs who run companies as if they were employees of the end client. It sounds a bit insane put that way, but that's been something going on in the UK for some time, and it was changing. And I was trying to explain it to my husband, who, like you, thought this one was a lunatic, but it's not me. I didn't invent it. You know, explaining lunacy can sometimes give you a bad reputation. So I was doing it with little things that were on the table, you know, a packet of tissues and this, that and the other. And he said to me, you need to make a video with all this stuff in it because people will understand it when you move stuff about. And I said to him, well, what can we use that's a bit more visually attractive than a box of tissues and an empty coffee cup? And I had three little rubber ducks that were all different colours.
Are those and the ones on your shelf over there?
Actually, I don't know. They all keep moving around.
They're
my flying ducks over there. Yeah, but no, they weren't flying in those days. And so we shot the video to explain it. And then people kind of got it, because business people are quite scared of anything to do with law and or tax. They don't like to talk about it because they feel if they talk to you, a professional, about it, it's going to cost them a lot of money. And they also don't feel very confident that they can take on board these concepts. I think lawyers and accountants have made quite a business over the last 50 years or so of going, I'm the only one that knows. And if you want anything, you've got to come through me. I'm like the gatekeeper to the truth. And business people don't feel very confident about that. And the micropreneurs I work with are quite frightened of those areas. So by explaining it to them with rubber ducks, it kind of took the fear out of it. And then it became a thing. People start talking about getting your ducks in a row. And now we have the number of ducks on our contracts tells you what year they were published in. It's become a thing. And people from all over the world either send me ducks or pictures of themselves with a duck going, I'm in a duck shop and I thought of you, which is really sweet. So I've got Spanish ducks and I've got ducks for our time, for example. I have a little duck with a...
Oh, that is the cutest.
Yay. And I've even got some nursing ducks because obviously we all need a little bit of care. I've got a whole row of nursing ducks all taking care of us. So it's become quite a thing. And it's... I think it's become part of the branding. And by the way, I'm not a marketing or branding person. First time someone talked to me about branding, I thought they meant like on a cow, you know? So, yeah. I was like, no, I don't want to be branded. What are you talking about? But it's become part of the branding. And because what we do, we try to make engaging and interesting rather than the law for the last 200 right. years on this has been. The ducks are really helpful. You know? And well, I don't know if you...
That's so good. Because people want to connect to something nice and easy, especially when they're learning. And so yeah. I think that that is really, really good. Tell us a little bit about the Coffee Klatsch. What is that?
Well, Coffee Klatsch is a German or a Yiddish word for a group of people who get together over coffee. And years ago, before we had virtual premises, like all businesses, we had actual premises. And we used to have a coffee machine that was the world's slowest coffee machine. And in the interest of efficiency, one of my business partners got rid of it. And we discovered that all the best ideas we'd ever had about how to deal with this or that had come from people standing around the coffee machine, making their coffee klatsch, waiting for the coffee to boil. And when we got rid of the coffee machine, we got a lot less creative. So we actually went out and got another slow coffee machine, but the years moved on and we got more distributed in geography. And so we went from having an actual group of people around coffee to an email box where if anyone ever said to me, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? I stuck it in a folder called Coffee Klatsch. And then when we were doing this thing for redressing the gig economy, and at the time, by the way, even the word gig economy didn't exist. We were just going, people are working in very different ways. They need different support in their business. We were working with the website and everything else, and we hadn't come up with a name, but the project was all going in the Coffee Klatsch folder. And somehow that got into the project name. And then I thought, well, whatever, you know, that's great. It was obviously meant to be. And well, coffee has a long association with business. Lloyd's of London was founded in a Coffee Klatsch.
Oh, really?
In a coffee house, yeah. Coffee and modern capitalism have grown up together.
Maybe that's because you needed to get through the day.
Before that, the only safe thing to drink was alcohol, because water wasn't safe before. And so people drank beer all day or wine. And obviously, you're not very productive if you have beer with your breakfast.
Yeah. Well, that's
so true. Coffee gave us capitalism as we know it, for good and ill.
Wow. Okay. Did you hear that, Brian? That's brilliant. Where do you see us going? Where do you see us pivoting to, you know, micropreneurs, even corporations? You know, how are people going to get through this vortex of uncertainty?
I think we're going to do it in different ways. Some people are kind of through it psychologically. I'm not saying that their life is more certain or less certain than anyone else's, but from a psychological point of view, some people go, I know what I'm doing. I live in the virtual world. I know how to make that work. I'm able to pivot. I'm resilient. I've got an outsourced team that I only pay when I need them. I don't have massive overhead rent rates, all this stuff. They feel, some of them, a lot more confident about what they're doing. Others go, I'm so tiny, I'm like flotsam and jetsam on the world, and I can't make my way, I don't know where my way is. For me, I think we are coming to a really important point. One of the effects of capitalism from the invention of the first coffee house to now has been, dare I mention it, as Marx predicted, the increasing concentration of wealth and ownership into less and less hands. Mm-hmm. And I think we're arriving at a point when if we're not careful, everyone will either work for a global corporation or be unemployed. Mm. And I think the role of the entrepreneur is almost as much a political one as an economical one, to present a buffer between those two. In my personal opinion, you cannot have a stable civil society without a middle class and without giving people the opportunity to lawfully earn a living and do more than be on minimum wage. You are creating something like Russia before the revolution, when you've got a really rich group of people and people who are starving, and it's not stable. So I see entrepreneurs as creating all sorts of opportunities, being able to respond in sometimes a much more eco-friendly way, a much more community-led way, and create things that they know people need, because we know the people we work with, don't we? You know, my customers are not customer 492 million, whatever.
Right.
I've got to the point I don't know them all by name, but I know quite a lot. I know what their issues are, what we've helped them with, what's going on. And I think that's the joy of being a micropreneur. Mm. And I think that the way we work has changed radically online. It's an opportunity to literally go global from your back bedroom. Mm-hmm. And that could be an amazing power for change in the world. It's an amazing power for equality, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. To level the playing field, that's exactly what we need to do. But we need a bulldozer right now because, again, like you
said. Well, we've got one. I think the world's given us a bulldozer. It's given us the COVID thing. It's giving us global warming. It's giving us a great deal of economic uncertainty. And the old playbook that made the billionaires has stopped working.
Right.
To a degree, the human race is facing an intelligence test. And the $6 million question is, are we going to pass?
I don't know. I don't know. I've been thinking about that a lot. Let me ask you a couple quick questions, though, about the business of Coffee Clutch and what you do. And I want to go through those because I'm seeing your banner in the background, which is very informative. Let's talk a little bit about contracts. When people go into business, what are three things that they should always be sure that they have inside of a contract?
The first thing, which sounds a bit negative, is clear provision of our ends. Because we are so focused on beginnings in business, it's like we're always in dating mode, speed dating mode, but every business relationship you have will end. Even if you are in lifelong partnership with someone, one of you will die. There are endings implicit in business. And micropreneurs particularly pay no attention to that. We don't pay any attention to who owns what when it ends, who's got the right to do what or how it will end. And this undermines an awful lot of micropreneurs when they just start to scale out. And I've done this. I've lost three or four business partners over the decades. And it always comes when you've just done all the hard work and you're scaling out. And then you have a big row about who owns what and you're kind of back to ground zero. So my top tip would be very, very clear about who owns what.
And brains, learn how to read it. Okay. I got caught up in a situation with an attorney. I got an attorney, had her create the contract, the terms and conditions and all that. And I had to present her with that contract because me and her were going to do a side deal. Well, she had put a little provision in there and I was so sure that she was on the up and up that, you know, there was no problem. I sent it to her. She signed it and there was a loophole for her to be able to get out of it. So learn how to read a contract in any business. If you're buying a car, if you are, doing a credit card, or if you are purchasing a home, at least understand the terms and conditions and ask questions. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. But the other thing I would say is wherever possible, work with attorneys who produce contracts that you can understand when you read them. Every single day in Coffee Clutch, because we support our contract customers in our group. So they come in and they go, I've got a contract from you. I understand it perfectly well. But the clients come in and they want to make these changes and they want it to say that. And a lot of those changes are in Edwardian English and Latin. Well, it is the 21st century. I think it's inexcusable not to write a contract if the two parties are English in English. You should be able to understand that contract. It shouldn't be full of, Latin phrases and any contract that's got here under, here in after, here to for in it needs changing.
Okay.
Unless you're the sort of person who goes to parties and goes here and after, I wish to be known as, if that's part of your day to day, that's great. But there is a movement, if you like, certainly in the UK and it's growing in America, to say, in our shared contracts, we have a common law jurisdiction, which is common.
Okay.
There is this idea that in order for two people to enter into a contract, they have to be what they call ad idem. I love it the way that has to be Latin. In other words, we have to be one mind. We have to agree. Well, obviously, if nobody understands the contract, there are going to be at least two minds in that contract that are different. Probably three, the lawyers and the two people who are signing it. This is not a good place to begin.
Okay.
Yeah. So right. make sure you understand it and don't let your lawyers write you contracts in gobbledygook.
Right. Let's talk about the events. Now, are you an event producer? Are you a person that helps people really go through the terms and conditions of creating an event? What does Coffee Clutch do when it comes to events?
Well, in the greater world, we run free online events. I do an average of 2 a month. There's only so many hours in the day, aimed at micropreneurs and the fundamental skills that we need to make our business work. So, for example, our next event next week is about how to secure your Zoom calls properly, because despite all the Zoom updates and everything else that's going on, it's not secure enough for some purposes. That's not to say it's not secure enough for any purpose, but a significant subset of micropreneurs work with products or services involving children or health-related data. And you'd be amazed what is shared during a Zoom call, one-on-one in a coach's consultation, whatever, that is not properly secure. So this is something we're doing. The week after that, or maybe the week after that, I lose it on our cycle. We're doing something, again, emphasizing how to design security for children's data. Now, we're not doing like HTML code, We're talking to people who understand the top line of it to go, what are the key issues? Because most micropreneurs ignore the whole thing because they're overwhelmed. Exactly. So it's much, much better to give someone 3 things they can take away and do, and then in 3 months' time or whatever, they could do another 3 things, than give them 4,000 pages of regulations and say, do that. And we have very different data privacy ideas in the UK and or Europe than you have in America, because there is a fundamental notion here of data privacy that isn't universally shared. California's tightening up a lot. Some of the states are. And so it's really important to understand when you're a global entrepreneur that you can't necessarily do what Facebook do, and that's get a lot of data and give it to other people. Facebook get fined a lot for that.
Yeah, they do. They do.
And rightly so.
But people get so angry with Facebook because they share their information. If you don't put your information out there, you know, there's certain things that I don't do. There's certain apps that I don't go to. There's certain cookies, you know, that I make sure that I don't attach onto. I go in and I change my password. Brains, when is the last time you've changed your password? They don't do that. I'm very careful about who I click on as far as a friend or someone that I let get in there. I've gotten people from all kind of countries, you know, outside of Brains, that have really wanted to tap in, and you'll see they're liking everything that you're doing. And I'm saying, you know, well, you're connected with me a little too quick. You don't know who I am. I'm suspect of that. So is that the type of advice that Coffee Clutch also offers?
Well, that depends on which experts we've got in the room. I mean, we do a lot around contracts. We do a lot around data privacy and data security. Those are our two big strands. But we do it in English. And we get tech experts in, but we make them speak English. And if they don't, we hit the mute button on them, you know, because what's very interesting is we all learn a very great deal about what we know. But actually explaining to someone who knows nothing about it is a completely separate skill. I often find myself listening to people and thinking, I have no idea what you're talking about. That used to make me think that was because I was being stupid. Now I've come to realize that if you go into a public space and you talk and no one knows what you're talking about, it's you as the speaker that needs to change your act, not the audience.
Right.
And the old experts were incomprehensible because they could only speak to each other. And this is why you hear people go, we've heard enough from experts. There's nothing wrong with being an expert, but there's no point if no one can understand you.
Exactly. Exactly. That makes total sense. So before we conclude, Annabelle, give us some direction and some suggestions on protecting data, be it, you know, our personal data or our business data. What are a couple tips that you have for us?
Well, you've got some good ones about not letting people in, really. My biggest tip, given that we're all home working at the moment, is something that nobody ever thinks about, and that's watch your Wi-Fi hub. If you're sharing your router, your hub, with your teenage kids playing games, And anyone who visits your house who could have any kind of malware on their laptop or phone when they plug in, and the older teenagers, let's not go there, but they do visit some sites you'd rather they didn't, don't they? The chances are that you are going to infect your machine and it's not secure. And one of the biggest wake-up calls to me last year was actually getting a tech guy to look at my Wi-Fi, because Wi-Fis can be set up to share devices, you know, so you can get to print when you're not physically connected with the printer. But if all the devices are visible to each other and sharing, and one of them's got phishing software on it, malware on it, viruses on it, guess what happens?
It migrates over to all of them.
Yeah. So we're so obsessed with, you know, what happens in the world out there, we forget that we have literally left our, it's like leaving your front door open to a burglar. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to get on top of your Wi-Fi router. And depending how old your router is and who sold it to you, most of them allow you to set up a separate guest access to household access where all your devices aren't visible. And some of them, which is particularly useful if you have teenage children, allow you to prioritize your broadband over theirs. So if they're playing games and you need to go live, you've logged in as you're the master user. They get what's left over after you rather than you get left over from them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so not only is it more secure, but if you're a home-based worker and your income depends on getting online, it's not funny if all the kids have nudged you off with Netflix and Amazon Prime and whatever. So in my household, that can't be done. I have a unique logon that just quashes anyone else who gets in my way. I'm a control freak, but I earn when I'm online. They're just playing.
Well, I can tell you that you are no quack. You may love ducks, but you are no quack. Thank you so much. You have been such a wealth of information. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you. If they need some consulting information, they want to do business with you, you know, definitely. How do they get in contact with Annabelle Kay and Coffee Clutch?
Okay, well, we have a website, and you can just see it in the corner of this screen, but I'll spell it for you. It's Coffee Clutch, Koffeeklatch, coffeeklatch.co.uk or .com if you prefer. It all comes to the same place. Talk to us about global contracts for your terms of business or the people you hire. Already online and cheap. Join our events. They are 8 o'clock UK time, so most people in America could make them. You know, they're not 3 a.m. for most people. These time zones are bewildering. And if you are a micropreneur trading across the world in the service sector, join us. We are all trying to help each other grow and expand in an ethical way and set proper boundaries so that none of us are exploiting each other and everybody knows what they're doing. And why not? It's chaotic enough without all the other people doing that, without us starting, isn't it?
Well, I'm so glad that you are so inclusive and you're including that. Brains, please. Go in, check it out. She has all the little things. You'll see them right there on her banner down there at the bottom. And check it out, because we need to have the security. If you're a micropreneur, there's also going to be great information for C-level and E-level executives that maybe not be aware of what's going on, because your data is being now taken off-site. You know, a lot of people are working from home. You've got people's medical bills, their account numbers, their bank accounts, all of that at your disposal. And so you have to understand what the security means, to have proper security on your data and to protect your clients. Thank you so much, Annabelle Kay, for being here on the edge with me and my brains. We thank you and we honor you, and keep doing what you're doing. You better hold it down in the UK. We're counting on you.
We're doing our best, lady. You keep doing what you're doing.